Welcome to the Corlin Economics Report, a weekly look at financial and political topics relating to asset-based investing. Guests on this program pay no fees to appear, and guests and hosts disclose any equity interest in companies profiled. Now, the Corlin Economics Report.
Hey everyone, welcome to the KE Report Weekend Show. Corey Fleck here, your host for this weekend's edition. Chad is taking a little time to visit with family, so just going to be me carrying this show, and we're going to be very much focused on the precious metal segment as I have a new guest on the show, which I'm very excited to kick off the show with. And on the back end of the show, we're going to hear from a fund manager focused in the metal sector. We're going to be talking market cycles for precious metals and also the pecking order in terms of large companies and money, how it's filtering down to some of the smaller companies. But again, still a very different environment for a lot of those juniors. So to kick off the show, very excited to announce that I am chatting with Randy Smallwood, president and CEO of Wheaton Precious Metals, also the past chair of the World Gold Council. Still very actively involved with the World Gold Council, and we'll tie that into some more of the comments around the precious metal sector and how it's working to get in front of new shareholders. So Randy, thank you very much for joining me. Let's start off by talking about your overall assessment of the precious metals market here. What sort of cycle are we in when you consider gold technically bottomed about 9 years ago, 2016, right around $1,000 an ounce? It's been moving higher ever since. And this year, especially in March, had some pretty significant breakouts and has very much established itself above $2,000 an ounce. So Randy, your assessment of the cycle that we're in for precious metals, please.
Well, first off, Corey, a real honor to be on the show with you, and thank you so much for the invite. It's actually a really interesting gold market right now. I've got enough what I call silver hair in me to remember that gold has actually been on a pretty strong bull run with a lot of volatility, or some periods of volatility, for over 20 years now. I do remember gold as low as $265 an ounce and having to make a living in this industry at $265 an ounce. And so yes, we're definitely on a good bull run, but there's a lot of strength in this market. And what's really unique about the last few years is that I would say this latest surge in gold prices is one that doesn't really fit with past bull markets, in the sense that we've got a strong U.S. dollar and strong gold prices, and that is very rare. Usually, strong gold comes with a weak U.S. dollar and vice versa, of course. And so what I would say is that what we're dealing with right now over the last couple of years, and what's really taken gold up to the record levels that we're seeing here in the last couple of months, is a real strong momentum that started in the eastern part of the world, China, Southeast Asia, the Middle East, even Eastern Europe, just really sort of kickstarted with both retail investing. I think there was a big segment of the Chinese middle class that got nervous about their store of value in real estate. And so there was a real push in China with respect to replacing some of their stored value in real estate with gold reserves, but central bank purchasing also out of many countries around the world. China almost leading the way, but good strong purchases from Turkey, from Singapore, from Poland. India has been positioning itself, all sorts of support all the way across the board from that perspective. And so what we haven't seen, though, is good, strong equity support here in the Western markets. And in fact, I would also say that, up until recently, we weren't seeing good measures of support at the ETF level. So it was a unique market in the sense that here we are with really strong commodity prices. Gold is climbing, and yet the equities aren't being supported, and ETF holdings for the longest time were actually dropping. That's changed. We're starting to see a bit more of an appetite, and definitely the senior companies in the gold space are starting to get a little bit more support. We're still not seeing that level of support at the junior level. ETF holdings have been clawing their way back. They're nowhere near where they were at record, in terms of their record highs, which is, surprising considering that we're dealing with gold prices that are near record highs, which just tells me how much more strength there is. The West really hasn't woken up to gold yet totally. But we still have good, strong support. I've seen China now has started again buying major gold for its central bank. And so we've still got good, strong support for gold around the rest of the world. But the West is well on its way to waking up. And I think the combination is pretty exciting for where we think gold prices will be going.
Yeah, it's been that story. Hey, gold's doing its job, but the equities just not providing that leverage that most investors want from them. And that always brings up the question. We get that question so much. What's it going to take to get other investors into the sector? Because it very much feels like we're just trading amongst ourselves, the diehard gold bugs and the metals investors that have been in this sector during the bear markets, still around now. I think it all comes down to the majors. Look, we can look to juniors and say, you guys need to perform better. But quite frankly, we know the trend of investors coming into larger cap companies and then filtering down. The majors, it's been a real mixed bag, still having a little trouble controlling costs. And their ability to grow is very much hampered because it takes a while to bring mines into production. How do you see the environment for majors? What more can majors do here?
Well, talk is cheap, Corey. Talk is cheap. We need to deliver as an industry. We need to deliver better results. And that's what brings in more investors and stronger investment support and people taking their profits from their gold investments and reinvesting it back into other opportunities. We need to actually deliver, though. We need to deliver those stories. And I'm going to say that one of the challenges that we do face as an industry, and it's not just the gold industry, it's actually the entire resource industry, is that it's cost measures, it's cost controls, and delivering on those cost promises. And the challenge that an industry faces as a whole, especially the mining industry, it's one of the reasons why we created the streaming business model that Wheaton has. Because in the mining industry, costs will chase the commodity price because when commodity prices climb, and you sit and think about gold, and as you mentioned, back 9 years ago, gold was down close to $1,000 an ounce. We're now well over $2,600 an ounce with a good firm foundation beneath it and all the vectors pointing to higher prices. And, ore bodies change when you see that much of an increase in commodity price. And the challenge, of course, in the mining industry is that as prices climb, as the commodity price climbs, the way I describe it is high-grade waste becomes low-grade ore. And it means that the mining companies, the operating companies, have to chase, rock that has less metal in it because it's now profitable with these higher prices. And that will drive up costs. And that's always been one of the challenges. The expectations, the hopes of shareholders is that mining companies hold their costs constant and you deliver that return or that increase in commodity prices, that gain right back to the shareholders. But the reality is, in a general sense, there's all sorts of unique individual stories, but in a general sense, the industry suffers from higher costs whenever commodity prices climb because you wind up having to chase lower grade material to push it through. And all of that lower grade material comes at a higher cost than a per ounce or a per pound basis, no matter, irrespective of what material you're talking about. As I said at the start of this, that's one of the huge advantages of the streaming business model is that our costs are actually defined on a per ounce basis. Both the capital cost, which is our upfront payment to get into the streaming contracts, but then also the production payment, the cost per ounce that we get when metal is delivered, is all defined by contract. And just taking that cost risk out has finally given shareholders a way to actually seriously invest into the industry and get the benefit of higher commodity prices.
Yeah, look, that streaming model, so much better of a business model because it does protect you against major cost overruns and individual mine risk. But from the, I guess, royalty streaming aspect, are you seeing more opportunities in some of these smaller companies or mid-tier miners that do seem to have a little bit better control of their costs?
Well, Corey, our business is delivering capital to the mining industry, and at different periods of the cycle, sometimes it's the majors that need that capital, sometimes it's the mid-tiers that need that capital, sometimes it's the juniors that need that capital. I would describe today's market as the juniors are definitely the little single asset or maybe a two asset junior companies trying to build mines. They're the ones that need the most support. They're the ones that aren't getting the support from the equity markets, and therefore a streaming as a source of financing, as a source of capital for them is incredibly competitive, incredibly attractive. When you're trying to build a mining company and you're trying to finance this through equity and your shares are trading at 0.3, 0.4 times net asset value, and you can do a stream at close to one times net asset value, you know which is going to win that argument. The CFOs of every mid-tier and junior company out there are very friendly with all us streaming companies right now. So that's been where we've been very busy. We haven't seen a lot of the majors. If you're operating right now with, especially in the gold space, with the margins that you have, You're pretty well cash flow positive. You're generating good returns, and you shouldn't have any problem in terms of doing that. But we are very busy on the mid-tier and junior side. A lot of single asset developers knocking on our door.
Oh, I bet they are. That's one thing I wanted to touch on, is it does seem like some of the more recent investments from Wheaton have been in more of the junior companies. Are you willing to take a little bit more risk than going down into some of these earlier life assets that maybe have a longer runway to becoming cash flow to you because you see the opportunity of being, in a way, almost the last source of capital for some of these companies?
Well, if we're the last source of capital for the company, we probably shouldn't be there. We're always focused on assets that should be producing in the bottom half of the respective cost quartiles. So that's to say that if I'm looking for a purchase or streaming agreement for gold from a copper mine, because just about every copper mine in the world produces a bit of byproduct gold. And actually, more than 60% of our gold comes from copper mines. And so if I'm looking for that, one of the first tests that we have is, where does this copper mine fit on the worldwide copper cost curve? Because if our partners aren't profitable, we're not profitable. So if the partners are going to be profitable, there will always be a measure of support for these companies in terms of bringing these projects forward. So, if we're the only source of capital, then we probably shouldn't be investing into that asset. We're really selective about what we invest in. We at Wheaton have had great success on that front. And so, it's a matter of being selective. And then when we make our investments, they are risk adjusted. And so if we're in riskier jurisdictions, if we've got challenging, if it's a single asset company, if it's a country that's got higher political risk levels to it, if the resource upside isn't as strong, metallurgical factors, stuff like this, development projects versus operating projects, all of those feed into what kind of a return we expect on our investment. And so we've got about 20 different factors that sort of capture that risk. And, I think we've done a pretty good job of that in terms of, it doesn't take much to see that when we're, some of the assets that we've invested into in riskier jurisdictions, we get a better rate of return on those investments. And the one thing, Corey, that I just need to remind you is that some of these assets, especially the early stage ones, the development ones, there's incredible upside to them from an exploration perspective, from expansion. One of the things that we always find, we like investing into copper assets because there's usually very little focus put on gold recovery, and it does tend to do better when it comes to them making the feasibility studies and such like that. There hasn't been a lot of focus on improving gold, and we do see improvements once they bring these things up. And so there is some real hidden opportunities in some of these smaller single asset companies.
Now, you talked about kind of the geographic diversity that you have and some of the better returns coming from what are perceived as sketchier jurisdictions. What sort of risk are you willing to take regarding jurisdictions? Because, boy, oh boy, all we're hearing about this whole last year was permitting, how companies can advance with permitting, and all the delays that inevitably come with permitting.
Well, to be honest, I mean, one of the other protections that we have is that the large portion of our capital doesn't go into the ground until permits have been received. So we'll set up these streaming agreements, but one of the first things that has to be satisfied is permits received, because our money goes into the construction capital. So that is one of the key aspects of it. But when it comes to jurisdictions, there are definitely uninvestable jurisdictions in this world. We won't touch China. We won't touch Russia. We need to be in jurisdictions where we feel like we would get, if it ever came to going to court. We never have had to, but in our eyes, it needs to be a jurisdiction where you can be confident of fair representation in the courts of that land. And so, there are ways we can temper that risk. We are a company that uses parent guarantees, and that's a really important aspect in terms of controlling risk, as some of our peers have discovered. It is something that does give a lot of confidence to us in that if something goes wrong within a particular operation, at least we have a parent guarantee that allows us to protect our shareholders' interests by looking at the broader assets of the company that's operating this mine. And that's an incredibly important, I mean, one of the things that we at Wheaton really put a lot of focus on is structure that protects our shareholders in the event of. We're happy to take geological risk, to take the operational metallurgical risk, and such like that. But when it comes to political risk, we think that's best left in the hands of the operator, not the streamer. And in fact, I would argue that I've had to remind many a company that we are in the business of streaming gold and silver. We are not in the business of streaming political risk. And so you keep that in your hand, give us a parent guarantee so that in the event something goes wrong, we'll get our money back.
Yeah, very interesting. Well, nice position to be in too. But hey, look, there is always that political risk. You mentioned one thing here about recovery. Sometimes looking at a copper mine and taking the gold stream out of it because people don't sometimes pay that much attention to some of these other, in a way, byproducts to major mines. Are there any technology advancements that you're seeing in this sector that you can encourage companies to use that would, in a way, just improve overall economics, but also just help us mine a little bit more efficiently?
Well, constantly. And to be honest, we have a program at Wheaton, which we call sort of a technical ambassador program, where we're constantly, the advantage that we have at Wheaton is that we visit every single one of our assets at least once a year, especially the operating assets. But we also look at a lot of other opportunities out there, which gives our technical teams a really good sense of best practices and, I would say, at the other end of the spectrum, worst practices. And so we're always willing to share and try and keep our partners as well informed as possible about the best of technologies. We've actually just kicked off a Future of Mining challenge, and it's really, again, about improving efficiencies and minimizing impact. And it's $1 million US prize that we're going to be awarding at the PDAC next year in Toronto. And we announced it during the Denver Gold Show in September of last, or I guess earlier this year, it's still December. And we've had huge interest levels from this, well over 30 applications. We've now received them, we're going through them, and one of those companies is going to be, $1 million richer towards advancing their technology of trying to improve operational efficiencies on a go-forward basis. And so it's something that the whole industry needs. At Wheaton, we're very focused. We do have an overlying mantra in our company, which is that the stronger our partners are, the stronger we are. And so we owe it to all of our stakeholders, to do the best to help our partners be strong. And I think it's one of the things that makes Wheaton unique as a partner of choice. And we have so many repeat customers in terms of people that have worked with us in the past coming back to us. And it's all really a part of or a result of all the effort that we put into trying to make sure we continue to deliver good, solid value and supporting our partners in delivering the best technologies.
Hey, kudos to you, Randy. I think this sector needs even more of that collaborative effort. And that even ties into the World Gold Council, too, but also what Wheaton is doing. What, in your eyes, can these large companies or even the World Gold Council do to further support the sector that could also result in more investors coming in?
Well, one of the challenges, I look at the gold sector and I do find it interesting that there's such high levels of interest, but there is a challenge. There's a trust challenge that we have to get to. And here's a little sidebar. I think we've all heard about Costco finally bringing in gold and selling, gold bullion in their Costco stores, and it's selling out incredibly rapidly. They can't keep it stocked every time they bring it in, and it's actually now becoming a pretty significant. It actually gets a separate revenue line in Costco's financial statements now. Costco is one of the most trusted retailers in the world, definitely in North America, in their world, wherever they operate. They are one of the most trusted, and so there's a lesson to be learned there about the trust behind the product that we're delivering. And so we at the World Gold Council have kicked off a huge number of initiatives towards elevating that trust. We've got a gold bar integrity program that a lot of the members, if not all of the members, very close to all of the members, have now committed to, where we're now, detailing and reporting provenance behind the gold that we send off to the refineries. And the refineries themselves have also committed to this. And so what that will allow is investors to know exactly where their gold has come from and know the positive benefits that gold production, where it was mined, and the positive benefits that were associated with that production. And so, I really do think it's elevating the trust from the investing space that the industry as a whole needs to do, the confidence of knowing that, you're not dealing with sort of dirty gold, for lack of a better phrase around it, and that you've got that clear provenance and that clear conscience behind the gold that you're investing into it. I saw recently Newmont is now committed to be the main supplier of all of the gold at the Costco retail things. Again, that high level of confidence and trust is only going to help in terms of attracting investors. And we just need to make it easier and more trustworthy to invest into gold. And that change is coming.
Randy, it's great having you on the show. Look, I really appreciate you taking this time to more talk big picture about the market. I think it's fascinating to hear from someone in your shoes how you're viewing the market and also how you're positioning Wheaton with continuing to support, but then also make money for shareholders. I'll open up the floor to you, though. Just give us a quick overview of Wheaton, the growth profile that you want investors to note as we head into the new year. And I know you have a long growth profile, so take us through the key selling features.
Well, you know, we've just finished our 20th year, or we're in our 20th year of existence. We started the streaming business model in October of 2004, and so we celebrated a couple of months ago. And the company hasn't been in a better spot than where it is right now. You know, this year we're on track to produce somewhere close to 600,000 gold equivalent ounces, a little bit the higher end of our guidance that we gave earlier in the year. But what's really most exciting about where we are right now is the growth profile we have on a go-forward basis. Now, keep in mind that, you know, because we're a streaming company, we can give you cost confidence. The ounces in our company will not ever cost more than $500 an ounce. We're, you know, they're all in the 450. Each one of our contracts has a unique production payment associated to it. But on average, we're about $450 per ounce, which is good because it gives us a bit of leverage over bullion and, for that matter, royalty companies that have become streaming companies, because we are a pure streaming company. All of our production comes through streams. And so we do have a bit of leverage, obviously not as much leverage as the producers, but that, as we know, and I've already talked about, comes with a much higher level of risk, especially on the cost front. So the growth that we've got over the next, well, 5 or 6 years now, and in fact, you know, we've got continuous growth every probably 7 years out, we're on a path to 1 million gold equivalent ounces. You know, we've added some significant streams this year. We've completed 10 transactions in the last 2 years, but, you know, the most recent one with Montage Gold on the Kone project in Cote d'Ivoire in Western Africa, it's going to add close to 10% of our, well, about 8% actually of our total production. So it's going to grow that even over and above. And so really what we're starting on is starting next year in 2025, we have 4 new mines coming into production, and we're going to be growing on average about 10% per year for the next 5 to 6 years. So, you know, we're in an enviable position of every quarter probably being a record and from a production perspective. And of course, with the trend in commodity prices, that just bodes well. If we continue to see higher and higher gold prices, and there's definitely strong momentum in that direction, that combined with our growth makes us, without sounding boastful, one of the most attractive ways to invest into the precious metal space. And the one aspect that I'm really sort of happy about, and I've seen this in some of my recent marketing, I just spent a better part of 3 weeks touring Europe, meeting with investors. I spent a lot of time in the East Coast. We're based here in Vancouver, but spent a lot of time in the East Coast of the U.S. and Eastern Canada. You know, the one aspect is that we are seeing more and more generalist interest in the industry. And I got to say, there's no better way for someone to dip their toe into the precious metal space than to come into a streaming company, because we really deliver you the best of the mining company in our life of mine agreements, where we give exploration and expansion potential and upside and commodity price exposure. But we do it in such a low risk way without the cost surprises that have made so many mining investments bad investments. We don't have any cost surprises in our company. We're very, very predictable on the cost side. And so I think we're perfectly positioned to really be a leader through the, you know, continued strong momentum of gold prices that, you know, with our growth, and makes us, as I said at the start of this answer, the strongest position we've ever been in at Wheaton, and very exciting times.
Yeah, well, look at the share price too. The market has taken notice, which is nice to see, because as much as we've seen a real dichotomy of some stocks doing well, Wheaton has been one that has continued to perform quite nicely. Again, Randy Smallwood, President and CEO of Wheaton Precious Metals. The company is traded WPM on the TSX, NYSE, and the London Exchange. Randy, thank you very much for your time. Pleasure having you on the show.
Corey, thank you. I really enjoyed that.
Al Corland's firm, A.B. Corland & Associates Incorporated, provides consulting services to public companies on matters of regulatory compliance. To find out more, follow the link from www.kereport.com. The Corland Economics Report will be back after this brief timeout.